Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
For coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast, I am Terry Foy, joined today by Dan Aber, and we are talking about all the news. And the biggest news of this week was a really unfortunate situation for the sport of lacrosse at large, and particularly those who care about and understand deeply the Native American roots of the sport. On Saturday night, in front of a crowd of nearly 12,500 fans at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the Georgia Swarm beat the Philadelphia Wings 13-11, and late in the fourth period, when the Swarm were leading 12-11, there was a comment made by the in-arena PA announcer in which he said about Lyle Thompson as he carried the ball up the floor, "Let's snip his ponytail." Later, Thompson tweeted about the comment and added that there were a couple of fans behind the Swarm bench who referred to scalping Thompson. It was a, as I said, really unfortunate situation for the sport. And Dan, you were in attendance. I wrote the news story the following day. So let's start with, how did you react when you saw Lyle's tweet?
Well, first I'll provide some context. Being at the game, at the moment it happened, I was in a box with a lot of people and I was filming at the time. And, you know, I'm kind of like focusing on my camera, and then out of the corner of my ear, you kind of hear that register. And I was like, what? Like, you know that's offensive, right? And then, like, it's one of those things where, like, did I really hear that? You know, like, you have to start to question your reality for a second. And I started asking people around, really just questioning what I heard. And no one had seemed to notice in the moment. And it wasn't until after the game, when I had conversations with a few people, that what I heard that night was what I actually heard. And, you know, I texted a few people afterwards. I said, like, hey, like, I think that the PA announcer said something offensive tonight. And literally, like, maybe 10 to 15 minutes later, I see that Lyle Thompson tweet. So everything just kind of, like, comes cascading down at that one moment. I'm like, wow, like, that really happened. People noticed. He noticed. The whole team probably noticed. And, you know, I was like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be bad.
And you mentioned that it seemed like the team reacted a little bit more strongly when they scored that game-sealing 13th goal, and maybe it was attributable to the emotion that was infused at that point. This is a team that has six Native American players on it.
Yeah, one thing I noticed was when they scored that goal, there just seemed to be a little bit more invigoration in the way they celebrated. Like, yeah, like, we beat these guys. Like, you know, you do something like that to us, you're going to get stomped on. And I think that's kind of just what their body language was giving off in that moment.
So in the tweet that called attention to the comment, the tone that Thompson set was, I don't know what the right way to put it was, not serious, not overly serious, I guess, because he referenced in 2019 and then ended it with "Damn Daniel," which is obviously a reference to a meme. And it was, I guess, fortunate in my regard that so many of his followers picked up on it and reacted with, you know, an appropriate amount of severity, because I don't think that he was necessarily trying to, you know, create a substantial stir. As a matter of fact, I reached out to him on Sunday morning, and he didn't get back to me until Monday, and said, you know, apologies is a little overwhelming. So, you know, I don't even think that he expected the reaction that his comments elicited. But, you know, before we kind of dive into the reaction and then the reaction to the reaction, you know, I wanted to make a point that is going to take a little bit of time to kind of work through. But Dan, I want your thoughts kind of when I'm done. And essentially, the argument or the point that I want to make is that this is a story about Lyle Thompson. You know, it's a story that folks have identified as being about, you know, racism and racial insensitivity, not fully understanding the role that Native Americans play in our culture, in our community, and in our sport. But again, I find this to be a story about Lyle Thompson. And so for me, the thing that matters most is just trying to, like, draw a line from the individual I met about a decade ago to now. And I'm not certain whether I met Lyle in the summer of 2008, but I'm almost certain, or I know for sure we did a photo shoot with him the following summer. At that point, you know, clearly His family was on the radar. His older brothers, Jeremy and Jerome, had come out of Lafayette High School, played in the first Under Armour game in the summer of 2006. They were going on to OCC. Jeremy at that point had moved on to Syracuse. There were still some questions around Jerome's status and whether or not he was going to make it to the Orange. He ultimately ended up not doing so. And then obviously there was this almost cult personality around the level of production and the amazing skill that Lyle and his brother Miles were putting on display, first at Lafayette High School, then a little bit more obscurely at Salmon River High School when they transferred in the middle of their high school career, and then back at Lafayette before moving on to Albany. And one of the touchstone moments was their decision to go to Albany, which was really big news at the time. And I say all that to say, when I first met Lyle, I knew who he was. I knew what a great native lacrosse player was going to do for the sport. We'd already started to see a little bit of increased attention around this at the college lacrosse level. Guys like Brett Bucktooth, certainly Gay West Schindler at the end of the 90s and early 2000s. But I think Brett Bucktooth being on a Final Four team at Syracuse, I remember him definitively from the 2006 season. And then the bridge to, like I said, Jeremy and Sid Smith and Cody Jamison and the contributions that they made at Syracuse, it did feel like Lyle was grabbing a baton that was very much in motion already. And he was our number one recruit in his senior class. And I remember meeting him, interacting with him at that photo shoot. Again, I'm not certain whether it was the first time I met him or not, but just remembering like overwhelmingly how shy he was and how few words he shared or said to me. And then obviously got to know him little by little over the course of his time at Albany. And so to go from that, and this is the part of the story that's been well told over the course of his junior and senior year of college, and then certainly, in his lacrosse career afterwards when he's, continued to take a stand on many social issues, Standing Rock being the most substantial. I'm just so impressed by two aspects of Lyle's approach. The first is his willingness to voice his opinion. He said in subsequent comments since his initial tweet drawing attention to the PA announcer's remarks, he has subsequently said, "I felt the need to do this for my kids so that the experiences that they have are a little less hard than the ones that I had." He talked about how he had been bullied and threatened by virtue of his long hair, and how it had helped to understand that it's a connection to his heritage and it's a point of pride. But he talked about how now it's got this element of being almost a symbol of, I don't want to say revolution, that's too strong, but something short of that, and how he hopes that in the future that's not necessary. It's just a point of pride. And that's the second point I want to make. I mean, this man's ability to communicate these really complex thoughts to a wider audience that otherwise probably wouldn't have any understanding of what he's gone through and how he feels is just so admirable, because it's so hard, and it's especially hard for someone who grew up in a culture that was really different from the majority of the audience that's listening to him. There was when the questions around his ability to be academically eligible at the college level arose, one of the really important factors is, he spent a certain percentage of his education not in an English-speaking community. It's hard to make that transition. And so when you pile up all the factors, you consider that he's a father of, I believe, three kids. He's continued to just play at such an elite level, indoors and out. The role that he played on the Iroquois national team at the World Games this past summer, I can't say enough positive things about Lyle Thompson. And the fact that, he's at the center of this story just means to me he's at the center of the story. The story is about Lyle. It's not about what a PA announcer said. It's not about what some idiot fan said. It's about what Lyle Thompson means as a lacrosse player in this community. And I just think that this reinforces how special he is and how grateful every lacrosse fan should be, that he is at the height of his powers right now.
Yeah, to me, Lyle has always seemed like a pretty private person. I think when you think about all the recognizable stars we have in this sport, he's a little bit on you know, the lower spectrum about just being out there. We know he's a family man. He's a bit of a private person. And I think just being a spokesperson and a voice in this sport is a mantle that he hasn't really sought out, but he's accepted it. And I think you're right. This story is about him saying, because when I read that tweet, you know, you're right about it, kind of read off as like, I've experienced this stuff before. I kind of can't believe it's still happening, but yeah, it's still happening. And what we saw from the community was this swift response that this was absolutely not okay. And I think when he saw all the support that was coming in towards him, he was like, all right, this is a moment that, you know, I think my voice can really, you know, make a difference. And I think what he did the other day, you know, I first saw it on Instagram, was just really inspiring, because, you know, he's accomplished so much in this sport, and to think that stuff like this can still happen to him and show so much grace, it's just, you know, like you said, there's just so much respect towards this guy.
So subsequent to the storylines around the weekend, the Philadelphia Wings announced that PA announcer Shawnee Hill wouldn't be working any more games. And that strikes me as an appropriate response. My presumption, and this is a little unclear, is that he'll maintain his full-time employment, which is within the Comcast Spectacor family. He is the PA announcer for the Philadelphia Flyers. And there was some reaction, including among the Island or editors, who said that they had either spoken to some of their counterparts or folks in their community, or seen on social media comments that, you know, maybe separating from him wasn't the optimal solution, because this was a situation of education. It was better to, you know, have the Wings PA announcer have experienced this, be educated, and then act accordingly as a result. And that speaks to what I think is a nuanced but kind of important issue around the original incident. So I think it's unequivocal that the fans that Lyle said were taunting him with comments about scalping, that's racist. There's no question about it. I think that a comment about time to snip Lyle's ponytail is a racist comment. However, I do think it's possible that it might not be racially motivated. It could be born out of ignorance, and that's what Hill said in his comments coming away from the incident. And I tend to believe him primarily because what I know about the way in which these, you know, multi-team organizations work, I'm going to bet that this was the second lacrosse game that this PA announcer had ever certainly called and possibly seen, that it's very possible he didn't know who Lyle Thompson was. And presuming that to be the case, it's more likely than not he didn't know the role that the Braid plays in the Native American community, and certainly the really ugly history that forcibly cutting Native Americans' hair has in their cultural history in the United States and Canada. And so, you know, that being said, I do think that there's nuance to this conversation that's important at least to think about, if not necessarily guide the actions. But I will say that from my point of view, finding another PA announcer is it's an easy enough and obvious choice in order to, you know, have a clean separation from what was a pretty ugly incident that I'm sure the Wings don't want to be associated with going forward.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard that, you know, comment air out in the arena, I kind of thought to myself, I think he thinks that, you know, the Braid is a cosmetic choice, and he does not realize, you know, the cultural significance of that Braid. And, you know, as to the question of, you know, whether he should have been removed or not, I don't really have an answer. I think that there's, you know, arguments that, you know, removing him shows that the NLL stands by its zero tolerance policy of this discriminatory remark. But also on the other end, I did see a lot of people voicing saying that, you know, this is an opportunity to educate, and this is an opportunity to really just make, you know, not only this in-arena announcer understand, you know, how his words were hurtful, but we can also relay this to everybody else and create a greater understanding amongst the lacrosse community and maybe the sporting community at large.
Well, that's an interesting comment, because to me, that's actually pretty close to the heart of the issue, which is, why is an arena announcer talking while game action is going on? Why is he trying to get the crowd frothy and all up in arms against the opponent. That's not something you typically see in other sports. And I think it speaks to what is kind of an identifier of the NLL, which is their in-arena experience is meant to really push the line. Music playing, the amount of additional, quote-unquote, content that's going on to supplement the action on floor is so significant that it's the thing that it's the best point of evidence for people who argue that the NLL audience doesn't bear much of a resemblance to like the lacrosse person, at least in the United States. And that's where it's kind of a positive and a negative. Like, it's a negative in the sense that NLL fans, there's probably a disproportionate number of them who just go to experience it and don't really follow what's going on in the league. They don't really care that much about what's going on outside of the 2 hours, you know, every 2 weeks that they go to the arena, you know, and enjoy the action on the floor. And then, and I would argue that the reason that's bad is because those people probably don't even know that this whole situation is going on, right? They, you know, those are the types of fans who, you know, they're not reading lacrosse social media. They're not reading the one or two mainstream news publications that are actually covering this aspect of the story. And so in that regard, yeah, they probably don't know that much about it. But on the other hand, the folks who are, you know, ingrained in the lacrosse community, who might not know about the role that the Braid plays and aren't NLL fans, like, they are getting exposure to this story. So it does have, you know, some positive legs that way. I don't know. I'm ambivalent about what it means for both the NLL and the way in which their audience overlaps with, like, the general lacrosse fan.
Yeah, I agree to that a lot.
So, Dan, one of the reasons that the crowd at the Wings game was so good is because it coincided with LaxCon. The 2019 U.S. Lacrosse Convention was at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in downtown Philadelphia. Over the course of Friday and Saturday, you're in the process of putting together the post-game sizzle reel. What were your takeaways from LaxCon?
Well, in terms of gear, it didn't seem like there was too many, you know, new and innovative products as we've seen in years past. I know last year was like there was so many things where like, wow, this could seem really revolutionary. It was a little bit tamer in that sense this year. But I will say the product that seemed to be getting the most hype was the PLL, because they had a booth. They had pretty
really
much
didn't. They didn't have a booth. Well, they had a 30-foot step and repeat with two drapes on either end that were the map of their 30 city locations. And I say that admirably. They had a activation that you and I could have assembled in like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes versus however many minutes it took every other vendor to set up. And to your point, I agree with you. They won the show.
Yeah, and they had most of their recognizable stars, Paul Rabel, Kyle Hartzell, Greg Grenlian, all there, all together, you know, giving out autographs, taking photos, and the line just to see these players together was just massive. And I was like, all right, these guys have clearly won LaxCon 2019. And also, to boot, you also have NBC Sports Studios having a booth on the floor and, you know, just promoting that, hey, like, lacrosse is going to be on TV this summer. And I think that's just the big thing, because I remember, you know, I was talking with somebody outside in the convention hall, and they're like, oh, this is Dan, he works for Inside Lacrosse, and he kind of just asked me just a very plain question, like, what's the lacrosse industry like? You know, how's it going? And I was like, well, apparently it's better than ever if you go out on the floor, because everybody's really excited about where this sport could go in the future.
Yeah, I would say that I didn't spend a ton of time on the floor. You know, I was kind of in meetings throughout most of Friday and Saturday, and I will say that every conversation included a "what do you think of PLL" comment. And the only analog that I can really recall is the, you know, I guess it would have been LaxCon of 2016. No, LaxCon of 2015, when Warrior launched the Warp. The mind share that launch captured was the only thing that I would compare to PLL, except that there was as much in that very venue or very event, there was as much concern about the forthcoming snow. And then it arrived and it was like 18 inches of snow and nobody was able to attend. It all started on Friday evening and nobody was able to attend on Saturday. And it was the Snowmageddon LexCon. Like, those two things are the only two things that came close to capturing the imagination of LexCon attendees, as PLL did this year in the 10 years that I've been going to that event. And, I don't really have a whole lot to add to what you said, other than it remains amazing how little they've actually rolled out and yet how much attention they've garnered. I mean, you know, you mentioned that there were a couple of players in attendance, and that was kind of the first time that I noticed a player other than Paul, Kyle, or Tom Schreiber really kind of being forward and talking about or being associated with PLL. And it reminded me that, you know, that's going to come, right? Once there's clarity on their contractual status, and those folks start talking about the PLL, you're going to see a significant amplification of the activity around this entity. And it's going to be really, really wild to watch. It's going to be really meaningful. Yeah, you know, it was hats off to them, because, like I said, I mean, you know, there were a lot of vendors that spent thousands of dollars and tens or hundreds of hours preparing for their activation, and, you know, PLL was able to win the show by spending a couple hundred bucks and, you know, a couple minutes essentially getting their spot on the floor all good to go.
Yeah, perhaps one trend that seemed to just register across the floor was the increasing personalization of the game. And what I mean by that is that there are so many products and customizations that, you know, benefit you as an individual player that seem to be proliferating throughout the industry. You know, you go on the floor at LaxCon and you see so many amazing custom-made helmets. There's a Philadelphia Eagles helmet. They had a helmet with Gritty on it. That was crazy. You go and you see all the custom, you know, team ones, like University of Albany. You have the Iroquois helmet. You have the Yale helmets that, you know, the matte navy was one of the cool things there that we got to see. I was like, wow, this looks great in photos. To actually have it in my hands is a whole other thing. This thing is sweet. They had Captain America helmet. They had Spider-Man helmet. They had the Thanos helmet, and they had the Thanos gloves. That was a hit. So, you know, Kyle Devitt spoke about this on the video that we're producing right now. Customization kind of seemed to be the theme. It's just like, it's what you want, we can make it. And, you know, I think that's a trend that manufacturers have hopped onto, because I think a lot in the past it's been done by, you know, customizers, stringers, dyers. Those kind of people have been into customization in the past. And I think what we're seeing right now is like a lot of manufacturers starting to move towards that, saying, whatever you want, we can put it on your helmet.
All right, Dan, well, we come back, we're going to talk about some college lacrosse news. And as the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues, we welcome in Ty Zanders, who earlier this week reported that Notre Dame attackman Ryder Garnsey has been ruled academically ineligible and will miss the 2019 season for the Fighting Irish. A lot to unpack here. Garnsey, one of the most notable offensive players for a team that certainly has national championship aspirations every year, and by some metrics, you know, needs as much help as it can get on the offensive side of the ball, but, you know, certainly has looked okay in his absence in the past. So, Ty, can you shed a little light on what you know about this situation and what you think it means for the Fighting Irish?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think it's a big hit to the Irish. You know, to lose your star player for his senior year is very unfortunate. You know, I first heard about this on Saturday night from, you know, a very good source who I trust, and, you know, I was pretty shocked. You know, and then Chris Jastrzemski from College Cross broke the news, and we posted as well. And I think that it's, you know, made its waves all over social media, as many have seen. But it's one of those things that, you know, you feel for the kid anytime something like this happens. You know, but I've, you know, no doubt that Notre Dame has plenty of depth at attack. Some young guys that will step up. I mean, Connor Morin comes to mind, Griffin Westland, Stephen Chase, Wheaton Jacobois. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, former top 100 talent in South Bend that can, you know, step up and make something happen.
And on Wednesday afternoon, Ryder posted on Twitter a note saying, "As reported, I was declared academically ineligible for the spring semester for not fulfilling my academic responsibilities as a student athlete at Notre Dame. I want to apologize to my teammates, coaching staff, family, and all those who have supported me and helped me get to Notre Dame. It was both irresponsible and selfish to put myself and my team in this situation, but I have the utmost confidence in my teammates and specifically the guys who will replace me. This will not define me or our 2019 season, but this is a very key comment. This is not the end of my story at Notre Dame." And it's an interesting one in light of the fact that two summers ago, Garnsey publicly stated his interest and exploration toward transferring away from the, you know, transferring away from South Bend, and ultimately decided to remain. Dan, what do you think of this news that he won't be with the team for the 2019 season?
So I think that the declaration he made on Twitter today probably hints that he's at least intending to come back in some form. You know, maybe it's just in the classroom, but I think hopefully for all the fans out there, because I do think that he is really one of Notre Dame's more recognizable stars over the past couple of years, especially on offense. And I think, you know, he brings a lot of star power and kids really want to see him perform on the field. I know we've been talking, you know, all season, who's the player who most benefits from this new dive rule? And a lot of people said Ryder Garnsey. He was a guy who, you know, famously last season was disallowed when he went into the crease. And a lot of people said, this looks like a goal to me. The refs on the field, though, didn't call it that. But I'm with Ty. I think that, you know, you hope for the best for this kid in this situation, mostly for education first, but obviously playing career second.
To me, what's interesting is, you know, this Notre Dame offense was so up and down in the 2018 season, and a lot of their fortunes centered around Brendan Gleeson and Brian Costabile, who were injured in the middle of the year. And when they came back, you know, it was a team that showed the capacity to put up 17 goals on good teams. They were the hottest team heading into the NCAA tournament before their run fell pretty short. And so I think when I guess the way I want to try to contextualize this is Notre Dame is among the elite programs in college lacrosse in terms of the depth of their bench. And Garnsey represented a guy who stepped foot on campus and contributed immediately, which is not a very common trait among Notre Dame offensive players. So the question is, what is the drop-off? Because it could be pretty wide because Garnsey was special, or it could be not very wide because the seventh best attackman on Notre Dame's depth chart is still really, really good. And so, you know, it's logical that the thing you care about most as a lacrosse fan is what does this mean for this team? And I think that my point is it's a really open question. I don't know. And ultimately, it depends on the quality of his replacements. Ty, you mentioned some of the young guys, but also, you know, in the with the graduation of Mikey Wynn, the burden was going to be spread, you know, a little bit wider as it was. What about a guy like Brian Willits, who's gotten on the field a fair amount over the course of his time, but hasn't necessarily capitalized on maybe what were some pretty high expectations coming out of prep school?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, I named a lot of names and had Willits' name in the back of my mind as a player who I think is actually coming on pretty strong, or did last year. Willits is one of the best shots that I've seen. I mean, bar none. I mean, he is a very, very special shooter. A big body, kind of moves like a basketball player, and you know, a great kid who plays his tail off, you know. And I think that he's someone that, not that he's anywhere close to a kind of a type of player that Garnsey is, but could benefit from this. And many, you know, many people will, and you'll kind of see, you know, a player like Willits, you know, really step up and just kind of, I'm just intrigued to see how the offense works. I think that I was already intrigued, you know, knowing they lost someone like Mikey Wynn, knowing they lost, you know, Coach Carwick to Colgate and brought in Neil Hutchinson from UMBC. There was definitely some intrigue on my end of how this offense has performed. They've gotten a hard time before, and people are critical of Notre Dame offense, saying that it's inconsistent, you know, and you know, easy to cover, whatever it is. I think people are often critical of Notre Dame's offense, and I think this will be a big time test for them. And you know, to kind of echo Dan's point, you know, yeah, Ryder was one of the more, you know, recognizable faces for Notre Dame, but the country too. I mean, like, if anybody who saw his high school highlight tape on YouTube, I feel like they watched that and they became enamored with his style of play. You know, freewheeling, very excitable and aggressive and a little brash. You know, he'll chirp here and there as a Boston kid, a New England kid. But, you know, one that I think people just loved watching play. And I know that You know, though we're all reporters, we're fans too, and I'm one of many that I think will miss watching him play in 2019. But you know, I know for me and many others, I'm just curious to see what he does from here, not just his playing career, but you know, you're a senior, you've had a pretty big role. What do you do now as a leader? You know, how do you lead your guys and make sure that you guys are still going in the right direction?
I've got a lot to say about the notion of Notre Dame offense. I think it's gotten a bad rap. I think that criticism has been a little off base over the course of time. I think that they've chosen to play a certain style that complements their defense over the last decade. You know, I think that in the late 2000s, they were the best dodge off the catch team in the country. They were really dynamic, guys like Duncan Sweezy. They were oriented around Ryan Hoff, and he was such a good inside finisher.
Even like Westy Hopkins after that, same thing.
Yeah, totally. And then to transition from that into, you know, being an offense that was built around the right-handed LA Dodger with guys like Zach Brenneman, and then that ultimately kind of met its platonic ideal with Sergio Perkovic as their step-down righty hammer. They've been so different year to year. That's the part that I respect the most. Yes. But not knowing what their offense is going to look like this year, I think one of the things that you can fall back on is the Notre Dame defense. Even though, you know, they graduated some meaningful players in important positions, they bring back one of the best units overall down low, relying on Jack Hilty, Arden Cohen, Hugh Krantz, and then at the short stick position with Drew Shantz and Timmy Phillips. They're going to be really good in that group. They got to figure out a little bit at the long pole. They got to figure out a little bit in goal. But, you know, at the very least, I think that they're going to be able to, as we traditionally know, put the clamps on some good opposing offenses.
And you always expect to see a really big jump from freshman to sophomore year. And, you know, with a kid like Matt Schmidt, he was a little bit up and down, as any freshman would be against a great schedule. He's an Under Armour kid who's outstanding. And I would expect, you know, his numbers to go up and him be, you know, another pillar of that Notre Dame defense, you know, from his spot between the pipes. And I think additionally, as good as Arden Cohen was, he will be better. You know, that's just the way that the things go as you progress and get more comfortable and, you know, draw more responsibility. So, yeah, I mean, it's always been the case for Notre Dame that, you know, as long as Jerry Byrne's been there, that the defense sets the tone for them. And I have no doubts they'll continue to do the same thing and kind of take some strain off that offense. But no shortage of options there on L.
Well, the reason that we knew so much about the Notre Dame defense is because we are unveiling the top units all this week on InsideLacrosse.com. Dan Abram did that for Face Off Yearbook, and now it is live for those of you who were not smart enough to buy a print or digital version of the yearbook more than a month ago. You could have known all these top units weeks ago. You could have been talking about it at Christmas parties. So for those of you that did miss out on that, make sure to check it out on InsideLacrosse.com, as well as all the other content that's going to be rolling out. We're getting there, yeah. Guys. It's almost a lacrosse season. We're going to be debuting our in-season podcast schedule here in the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, we're going to continue to come at you with preseason content. But we hope you enjoyed this news roundup, and we'll be coming back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Ty Zanders, at Dan_Abern, at Terrence Foy, at Inside_Lacrosse. Give us a follow on Instagram at Inside Lacrosse. And of course, if you like what you hear, tell a friend, leave a rating and review. And like I said, we'll be back later in the week.
Cool. Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.